All right, what's up, college baseball fans? Welcome to another episode of the 11.7 podcast. I have a new microphone. I've heard everybody's complaints about the audio the last couple episodes. I'm sorry. I had no idea what was wrong. I switched microphones, went from my newest one to my oldest one. Didn't work. So I apologize. Went out and bought another microphone here just to make the audio experience a little bit better. Kind of a recap here. Jake will be joining us later on in the episode. He's out doing business meetings. People are really trying to buy high, or I guess buy low, on Jack DeLongshaw right now and his up-and-coming broadcasting career. But Dimitri is here, even though his name does say Ben on the YouTube. Maybe you should switch that real fast. I know you want to be me, but it's okay. Right now, you do not want to be Ben Upton. I'll tell you that right now.
Boom.
Anyways, the... I just got a text message from Ben Mintz asking about college baseball gambling picks right now. I'll get back to him later. But anyways, we're here. We're going to recap the midweek first. We'll do our weekend series pick 'em when Jack joins. And then Demetrius catching flight back home. He's leaving San Diego, going to stay home in Atlanta for a few days, and he's going back out to Italy. So I'll give you the floor here, Demetrius, before we touch on Home Field Apparel and our partnership with them. Tell the fans, you're getting back to Italy for what, the fifth year in the fourth or
yep,
fifth year?
Fifth season. I mean, it'll be the content game will start ramping up a little bit. I don't have as many distractions and busy and stuff out here. Highly recommend checking out San Diego. Probably my number one favorite place in the United States now. Like Pacific Beach, La Jolla, Little Italy, like all around San Diego. Dude, it's a beautiful place. So highly recommend that. Yep, we are catching a red eye back to the East Coast tonight. Got some wedding to go to, got some shit to take care of, and then we're off to the land of Italy.
Yep, so you're playing professional baseball over there in Italy. Awesome job. If they ever need like a DH pinch hitter, let me know. I'd love to join you over there. And as always, if you're a long-time listener, you know, Dimitri, about April 10th, usually, he'll be out there in Italy. But that does not stop the college baseball coverage. Dimitri works late hours, early mornings, covering the game and keeping up with it. So the content's only going to get better. Meanwhile, Jack and I will have boots on the ground here in the United States, covering college baseball, hopefully in person a little bit more. Our North Carolina trip was awesome. Had really good feedback from coaches, players, parents. So we'll try to schedule something else here pretty soon. But anyways, let's get into our partnership with Home Field Apparel. If you guys are on the YouTube right now, I'm about to share my screen. And every episode, we give away a team of the week. And this week, the UNCW Seahawks. Ooh. They have a huge home win on Tuesday night against Coastal Carolina. And when people say midweeks don't matter, the amount of just joy and fired up the Seahawks were showed that, you know, midweeks do matter, especially in these in-state rival, I guess not in-state rivalry because North Carolina, South Carolina, but, you know, two teams that are at the top of the mid-major rankings over the last 5 to 10 years. And this game meant something. Another reason why I made this the team of the week is because they have some incredible merch over at Home Field Apparel. You guys can look at it if you're listening to the podcast. It's just homefieldapparel.com/collection/UNC Wilmington. And I love the colors.
That I love the logos. Is sick.
The hoodie is sick. I like this black one here, the white one. I mean, it's just really cool stuff. So they have over 150 teams. If you guys use our promo code CWS24, just think College World Series 24. You get 15% off your first purchase there. I mentioned it last episode. I don't know if you could hear me or not on the audio, but they're about to launch their college baseball collection now that college basketball is over. And just let me tell you,
college basketball's not over.
Well, it's almost over. I guess we are in the Final Four. My bracket's been busted for a while, but yeah, Home Field Apparel is about to, I think they're about to shatter the glass ceiling of college baseball apparel. It's going to be sick. I got some sneak peeks with the guys. You guys are going to love it. A lot of teams, a lot of retro looks. It's I'm trying not to spoil too much. I don't want to say too much because I'm not allowed to. But just be on the lookout. That's all I'm going to say.
Hey, we shattered the college baseball apparel game with Defend the Bus Lot.
Right, yeah, we have our own apparel line too. Georgia State, they chirped at us a little bit on Twitter, but in a fun and caring way. And so we decided to launch a Georgia State-esque, can't say exactly, but esque, Defend the Bus Lot shirts. And they promoted it on their Twitter, which was sick. We sold a good bit of them and hoping to launch some maybe a few other schools. We have about 12 right now, I want to say.
How many do we have? We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
13 now. Yeah, once an episode, you'll get Dimitri counting, starting at 1. There's like always one point in the episode where you just go, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Oh, because, oh, yeah, we always do that. Every episode, we always do something like that.
Yeah, every episode, you're counting something. But anyways, we're here. We're going to recap the midweek. And I think the perfect place to start is with Jack Caglione. 491-foot homer. And that wasn't a close ball game against Florida A&M. Like, this wasn't a 15-0 run rule. I think they ended up winning by 3, 10-7, something like that. We were at risk of another SWAC team beating an SEC team in the midweek because on Monday night, the Southern Jaguars beat LSU on the road. So SWAC's a lot better this year, man. I think there's some really good teams, and they're not going to be that automatic win in regional play as a 4 seed.
The swaggy SWAC.
Now, the reason why I brought it.
I was going to say something about, I keep seeing people say, oh, Dimitri, you're on your knees for Jack Cags. I think Jack Cags sucks, by the way. This was just a whole narrative. I was just saying he's really good. He's not that good of a player. I think he probably like maybe 48 to 52 range in the best college baseball player ranking for this year. I don't think he's very good. He's average on the mound, can't hit too much. So I just want to make that clear. I don't think Jack Cag is very good. I'm not a big fan of him.
Look, you know, 80% of college baseball fans have no sense of sarcasm. And you're about to get us canceled. The Florida SID is already clipping this and putting it on their College World Series montage that they're going to release.
Oh, my God. I forgot they're going to clip it without any context, and I'm going to look like an idiot.
That's why my face was like this. I was like, oh, here we go again. People are going to call us clickbaity. The reason why I brought it up, though, is the day after we were arguing whether, you know, Jack Caglione's a top 5 overall pick or not, is he going to go 1-1? That boosted it quite a bit. But it takes a special college baseball player to hit a ball 450 feet. You add an extra 41 feet to that, and going off of what he did last year, and I want to say he's improved as a hitter this year. The numbers quite aren't what they were at this point last year, but he's not getting pitched. He's not getting pitched to as much. You couple that with he looks more athletic on the field. Like, his defense is spectacular. On the mound, he's tremendously better. Like, I think there's a good chance that it's a no-brainer to some organizations. Like, let's just draft him number 1 overall. If he's a bust, like, we will take that, because right now it looks like he's got very little bust potential. The floor is high. The ceiling is way high. That's my opinion.
Okay. The sarcasm was sarcasm. I think he's the best player in college baseball. And just I don't understand why people always have to take it as, oh, you're on your knees for him. Dude, you cover the sport. When the best player is going off all the time, you cover it. You talk about it. You praise him. I don't think that's a weirdo thing. I think he's unbelievable. How can you not just appreciate the talent that he has and just be unbiased for 5 minutes and just be like, this guy's – like, when people watch Ohtani, they're like, oh, Ohtani. I mean, he's the best player in baseball, and it's a talent. When you watch LeBron James, you appreciate greatness. So that's the same thing. Like, put the fandom aside for 5 minutes. Just enjoy the talent. He's going to be gone next year. The attention will shift to somebody else or a couple other players.
I have a comparison for Jack Caglione. He reminds me a lot of like the Caleb Williams USC. Caleb Williams made that USC team super competitive. And, you know, 2 years ago, BCS, not BCS, but New Year's Six berth, when he was on the field, they were really good. But the defense let him down. If you take Joe Cabs off that Florida team, they're probably 3 or 4 wins less and probably sitting around the 500 mark. He is not single. I mean, most Sundays he's single-handedly winning games with his pitching and with his bat.
This past Sunday, he literally single-handedly won them the game.
Right. And then you start seeing, like, even these midweeks, a close game against Florida A&M, like, he comes up clutch and makes it a 3-run game versus a 1-run game in the 8th or 9th. So the amount of effect that he has not only on, like, himself and his draft stock, but the team as well. Like, there's points in the year where he's been carrying the team to wins. So
I wonder, I wonder what his war would be if there were the true college baseball war.
I don't know, man.
It's got to be number one. He's got to be the highest, right?
Yeah, I mean, as far as two-way players go, probably. I don't know.
Yeah, anyway, we don't want to talk about
that. So, and then I wanted to piggyback off of that. I want to talk about Braden Montgomery, another guy that we argued about last podcast. Like, can he go top five? Is he a potential 1-1? I mean, he did it again. Backside into the wind, just crushes a ball at Texas State, and that puts him at 17 home runs on the year. He leads the country in RBIs with 47, and it's the athleticism for me. I'm not a scout. I potentially want to be a scout one day because I like looking at the intricacies of each player, like personalities too, emotions, things like that. When Brandon Montgomery's on the field, he's the best athlete on the field. He might be the best all-around athlete in college baseball. I'm sure if you gave him a pool stick, he would beat your ass in pool. He's just one of those guys. Obviously, transferring from Stanford like shows that he's super intelligent as well. You can tell on the baseball field he's intelligent too. I'm just saying that, you know, book smart, he has it too. So he seems like another guy with a super high floor, super, super high ceiling. Oh, yeah, he also pitched quite a bit at Stanford. They don't need him as much at Texas A&M, but I'm sure if they asked, he would love to do it more. But he's just so valuable in the field too.
Like, yeah, those two another great talent. I think this is the I talked about it like last week or 2 weeks ago. I think this is the most talent we've seen collectively as a whole in a single season in college baseball.
Like, 100%. And I think it's going to get better and better because the draft is shorter. Guys are electing to go spend 3 years at an awesome college campus and develop rather than go to rookie ball in Idaho. It's a changing game, and that's why I think college baseball is going to continue to grow in popularity. Like, there's nothing holding it back. With NIL, with transfer portal, guys can play where they want, when they want, and make money along the way. It's almost a no-brainer. And it's like Pags and Montgomery kind of stole the show in the midweek, but like Charlie Condon, we ran a poll on Twitter that got, I think, close to 10,000 votes. You know, who's going to end up winning the Golden Spikes Award? Because I was curious to what people thought. Charlie Condon got 48% of the votes. I mean, blew Hagen Smith out of the water, blew Jack Caglione out of the water. I also put like an other option there because, you know, Bazana can win it. I think Chase Burns like maybe has a path to, if he shuts out at ACC teams throughout the year. Like, I don't know. There's a few other guys that could win it potentially, but those three right now, you have the best pitcher in college baseball in Hagen Smith, who's striking out like over 2 an inning. You have Jack Caglione, the best two-way player in college baseball. And you have the best hitting statistics hitter in college baseball in Charlie Condon. But like Brandon Montgomery, he's clearly put himself in that picture. Travis Bazana clearly has put himself in that picture. So similar to last year when J.J. Weatherholt got left off of that that finalist list, the top three, two of those guys are going to get left off, at least two. It's crazy to me, man. Like, this is the best collective of talent that we've ever seen at this level.
I mean, okay, Condon, 1723 OPS, 19 homer. Montgomery, 1472 OPS, 17 homer. Travis Bazana, 1665 OPS, 16 homer. And then you got Grant Nipp, 1748, 15. Lyle Miller-Green, 1424, 15. And then you've got Tanner Thatch, Wilmington, Roman Cons, Morehead State, both with 15 homers. Then you got Jack Hag, 1257 OPS, 14 homers. Dakota Jordan, 1352, 14 homers. So, like, the home run numbers are, I mean, they're up there. I mean, we're just now 28, 29 games through the season. And these guys are averaging a home run every two games, like most of these guys. So, like, I don't know. I'd have to go back and look at the true numbers, but it seems like the power numbers are up again. The talent is increasing, so your talent pool is bigger. I mean, it's much more enjoyable to watch seeing this many high-level players.
Yeah, and the power numbers are up, right? Like, and hitting is in general. We always talk about a rumor of, are the bats or the balls juiced compared? Probably one, if not both of those things are true. We don't have evidence, but I know I played in the BB Corps era 2014 through 2017, and balls were dying at the warning tour consistently. But also, the pitching numbers are so much better, at least in the top tier of people. You look at like the Chase Burns, the Riley Huge from Winthrop, Ryan Johnson from Dallas Baptist, Hagen Smith, of course, Peyton Tolley, like those guys. I mean, they're striking out 1.5 to 2 guys per inning, and like they're doing it in dominant fashion. So it's kind of evolved into the major league product already, and that's why I think you're going to start seeing more guys go straight from college, maybe spend half a year in the minors, and then start the season the next year in major league baseball.
Yeah.
It's evolved into a strikeout, home run, a lot of extra base hits. There's really no much. Like, there's certain teams that play in between. They'll play the small ball, hit and run, bunt, safety squeezes. There's still teams that do that stuff. But for the most part, like, it's one extreme or the other. So, anyways, that's just kind of my tidbit there on the midweek. Yeah. You know, UNCW, we already talked about it. They beat Coastal. That was a huge win for them. UNCW still undefeated in CAA play, 6-0, leading that conference, which I think is like one of the best, if not the best, mid-major conference. Behind the Sun Belt.
I was going to give a couple other shout-outs to teams. We don't have to really dive too much into them, but Stetson, 20-9 on the year, 7-2 in the Atlantic Sun. They boat race South Florida, run rule them in 8. That's a dangerous team. East Carolina boat race NC State. I think they're, I mean, at this point, you just got to expect East Carolina to be a good team every year. Like, there's no down year at Cliff Godwin. Oral Roberts, 10-19 on the year, dude. They lost everybody. When you're a team like that and you go to Omaha and you hit the jackpot with that many players on your roster at the same time, it's bound to be a major, like, a lot of work to get back up there.
Yeah, but let me talk about Oral Roberts just real quick. I'll let you move on. They will trade that Omaha piece for a below 500 season the next year, because what it does is it sets up recruiting for the next 4 years. Like, Oral Roberts maybe has a down year this year because they're replacing everybody. Like, it felt like 8 starters, every single pitcher that pitched, they had to replace. But they probably got some really good high school guys to commit. Like, oh, this team just went to Omaha. And that effect will last 2-3 years. And it's like what you do those 2 to 3 years after you make Omaha. Like, what kind of recruiting you do then to see if you bounce back and become like one of the premier mid-majors in the country. So the coaching staff's still there, and I trust them. Like, I think they're going to develop the guys well, recruit even better. And this is a program that should bounce back huge next year.
I agree. I think you nailed it right there. Memphis, below 500 team, they host Ole Miss. They beat them. Ole Miss is struggling. I think it's safe to say Mississippi State is the better of the two right now this year. I think they're going to be the postseason team. Ole Miss might miss out again. And I don't know. I know we talk about trading national championships for 5 years of irrelevancy, but Bianco, they're going to get impatient because they tasted the top and they're going to want it again as soon as possible. So that's something to keep an eye out on. Lamar.
Well, let me touch on that.
Yeah.
Bianco has been there long enough where him winning a national championship, I think, buys him 5 years. A guy like Lemonis that won it with really not his recruits, like not his guys at Mississippi State.
A little bit different.
It bought him 3 years. And same thing with Jay Johnson at LSU. Nobody wants to have this conversation, but he won it in year 2 at LSU. Maybe it was year 2, right? Yeah. Not year one. Yeah, year two. A lot of those guys were transfer portal guys that contributed. Like, that probably bought him the same, like, 3 years. If LSU finishes at the bottom of the SEC this year and has another bad year, like, he is very clearly on the hot seat. He's coming from the Arizona team that he brought to Omaha, right? Like, he did it good. Like, he's a great coach. Let me get it straight. But there's a difference between what Lemonis and Johnson did versus what Bianco did. Bianco's been there forever. Like, it should have bought him more time winning that national championship because it's like, right. Okay, he's proven he can do it. Those other two, like, they might get replaced less than 5 years after winning a national championship.
I agree 100%. I think it's black and white comparing Bianco and comparing Lemonis and Jay Johnson. I mean, Paul Skeen, Tommy White, and name whoever else, Thatcher Hurd, like, Christian none Little. Of those guys are recruits. They're all transferred. But if you go look at Jay Johnson's track record at Arizona, he had a lot of mediocre years there too. He had some great years, but he had a lot of mediocre years there too. So it's sometimes you got to track, you know, like when they say with money, follow the money. Same mm-hmm. thing, you got to follow his track record. And usually you'll see a bigger picture here. So I think Jay will be fine, but I'm telling you, LSU faithful will be on his ass.
They got rid of Coach O, the football coach, winning a national championship less than 2 years later, he's gone. Like, that's how quick that Baton Rouge does it. There's a lot of turnover. So, and it shows why Coach Maneri was so successful. Like, they gave him a leash, and he was just year in and year out unbelievable. So,
which is something to remind ourselves, when head coaches are at these big programs for 10-plus years, even if they don't win a national championship, that is impressive because, like, you have to be that good to convince the AD, convince your fan base that the hope is still there. They still think you can have the ability to win a national championship. That's the goal, winning a national championship. The moment they think, you know what, we can't win a national championship with this guy, we're going to go get somebody else, these guys continue. 10 years at a school is impressive. Like, I really think that is almost just as big of an accomplishment as winning a national championship.
Yeah, well, and that's a big reason why guys like Cliff Godwin at East Carolina, Justin Herrick Campbell, I'm blanking on, embarrassed, but there's Coach Barry at Southern Miss. Like, that's a reason why those guys stayed at those premier mid-major teams, because they thought that they could win a national championship, like Gilly did at Coastal Carolina. And, you know, they're making good money, but there's no pressure from, you know, donors and stuff from these SEC schools or ACC too, to get rid of them after 2 or 3 years. So, like, that's why Cliff Godwin hasn't gone and, you know, tried to get the Ole Miss job, or Justin Hare going to get the Georgia or South Carolina job. Like, they think they can win at their schools, and they have way longer of a leash. And they already build these relationships with people around the community, athletic department, and things like that.
Or you can argue the flip side. They have so much confidence in their plan and their job security that they can sit at those schools and still win and wait for their dream job to open up, whatever it is. Everybody's got their one place. They're just like, I can't turn this one down. So, I mean, maybe Georgia wasn't the place for Justin Hare. Or whatever. Scott Barry never got that one place that – was just like, oh my God, I can't turn this down. So yeah, I mean, I think people need to appreciate and recognize when those coaches are at these schools for that damn long. I think it's almost like winning a national championship. You're that good, that consistently for that long.
Yeah.
So couple other teams, Lamar. I mean, wake up. The Cardinals are legit. They roll in, they beat Sam Houston after coming off that sweep over Oklahoma, major spot to let down. And, you know, oh my God, we're so good. We're like starting to get recognition. You lay an egg against Sam Houston, who's also a good team. Nope, they smack them. Indiana smacked Indiana State. I don't know what to think of the Hoosiers team. Like, I don't know what to think of them. I think
they're going to be okay. I was watching that game, and Indiana was trying so much harder than Indiana State to win that game, right? Like, Indiana State is now in conference play. They have a big conference series matchup, I believe, against Murray State, who's really good this weekend. And Indiana, a team that came in with high expectations has fumbled the bag, as the kids say nowadays. Like, they have not played good baseball. And this is a big-time rivalry in the baseball field. Like, Indiana State, Indiana, they battle over recruits. And Indiana State already beat them once this year, like 12-7. So this was almost a must-win game for Indiana. Like, hey, let's prove that we're a good team, not to anybody else but ourselves. Like, let's prove to ourselves we're a good team. And there was a couple big momentum points. Like, Tony Cerny hits a grand slam to tie the game, and they kind of took that momentum and ran with it. And they were throwing their better relievers, and towards the end of the game, Indiana State kind of punted it. Like, they were throwing guys with minimal innings pitched. Yep. So that was something that Indiana really needed. Like, they really needed to win that game.
Can we both agree that Georgia Tech pitching is not going to get any better?
Dude, they're not bad. It's the offense that's been struggling, really, like over the course of the year.
I mean, you can say their offense is struggling, but listen to this. Gave up 8 runs to Presbyterian, dude. They gave up, by the way, they got swept. Gave up 16, 5, and 10 to Boston College on the weekend. 31 runs on the weekend. Gave up 9, 11, and 5 to North Carolina, getting swept. So their offense is struggling. But if you look at it, they're coming out of the gate, you know, first 3 innings already down. I mean, Boston College put up 5 in the first, one in the first 3 innings, and then they put up 4 in the first 2 innings. So, like, North Carolina put up 3 in the first. And then Georgia Tech was down 4 after 4 innings, again, another game. North Carolina, they were down 3 after 3 innings. So it's like their starting pitching is atrocious right now.
Right. Yeah, it's getting the first 9 outs of the game. Like, they can't get the first 9 without being in a deficit. That's a good point.
Presbyterian, 2 in the first, 2 in the second, 1 in the third, 2 in the fourth. They were down 7-3 after 4 innings. I mean, they came back and won, but it's like you can't even get into the postseason without pitching, because the ACC will bury them.
Oh, yeah. The ACC is so offensive this year. It's crazy what the ACC is doing. I have two other midweek points before we move on to the weekend. Georgia Southern smacked South Carolina. Like, Georgia Southern's playing much better baseball right now. They're going to be a force in the Sun Belt. Like, just look. In 3 weeks, they'll be at the top of the standings, like near the top. And then Jacksonville State, they set an NCAA record with using 14 pitchers in a 9-inning game. 14 pitching changes. They lose to Troy. They were up, I think, 9-0, and then they blew the lead. Troy ended up winning something like 18-10. But my goodness, Jacksonville State. I bet that game probably lasted 5 hours. I didn't watch it. I kind of took yesterday off, a little mental reset day. And when I was looking at box scores and looking at the Twitter account, I was blown away. 14 pitchers in a 9-inning game.
That's so nuts. Cool.
Yeah, that's cool, but it sucks.
Hey, do you think pitching coach or head coach had one of those little step trackers on their wrist and was like, damn, how much did I walk out and back from the mound?
Yeah, because you got to think there was probably some mound visits that didn't result in pitching changes either.
So 14 changes, you could assume, I wouldn't say double, but they probably made 25 mound visits. 24, 25
minutes. No, that's not true, because they probably had some guys pitch an inning, finish the inning, and then send another guy
back. All right. So let's just say 15 and 20 mound visits.
No, I would say like somewhere between 10 and 14-ish.
Maybe. Okay. Yeah, you're probably right. Couple other ones. FAU, massive series against East Carolina this weekend. They shut out Miami at home. I think it speaks volume to these teams, especially in the state of Florida and Texas, that can win their midweek. Florida State, I think they're undefeated in midweek. They take care of business. I mean, Jacksonville's not a bad team. They beat them. I saw a couple other ones I wanted to point out. Southern Miss, I mean, Southeast, it's hard to win in Hammond, America.
It's hard, dude.
It's hard to win. So, I mean, I'm really excited about some of these smaller teams that have a lot of potential. So I think we're in for a fun rest of April and a big time May as we head into June. So
I want to get out in front of this. There's like a stigma going around college baseball, social media, and maybe even outside of social media, that midweeks don't matter.
No, they do.
And when I say this, I mean, I'm being 100% honest. Like, midweeks matter. And it's not because, like, maybe these people on social media are saying it because their team is losing midweeks consistently. Some of the biggest fan bases, they don't really show up in midweeks. Like, the team loses to lesser opponents. But, for example, like, you just said the Lamar-Sam Houston game. I brought up Indiana State, Indiana. Southern Miss, Southeastern Louisiana. These midweeks matter because this might be the only time they play that team this year, or it might be like part of a three-game series spread across three midweeks. But these schools battle each other for recruiting purposes. They battle for RPI points. Guess what? The RPI doesn't know if it's a midweek or a weekend. And when it comes down to it, if you lose three midweek games that you should win and you're sitting at 46 in the RPI versus 31, like, that's an at-large spot. So they do matter. I'm tired of people saying, like, that maybe don't do the research. Like, oh, midweeks don't matter. Well, guess what, Florida fans? Midweeks might be the reason why you don't host a regional versus you do. Like, it could very well be the case. If you're sitting at 19 in the RPI, but you lose three midweek games to very bad teams, that could put you up in the 14 to 12 range. So they do matter. You just don't realize it right now. Ask, like, Grand Canyon a couple years ago. Ask UC Irvine last year. They slipped up in a couple midweeks against bad teams out in California, and they didn't make it into the tournament. So they do matter.
I think what we can basically say from a wide lens perspective, there's only very few conferences that midweek don't matter. And I put that with quotation. Florida, they can lose every midweek game and sweep every SEC series, and they'll be fine.
Right. You have to win the weekend series then.
But we're not just talking about the SEC. We're not just talking. I mean, the ACC, same thing. If Miami lost every midweek and went out and went and won, I don't know, 22 ACC games and finished first in their top 10 RPI, then those midweeks would be the difference between a national seed and just a regular hosting spot. So, right. Of course, they don't care about all that, whatever. But if you really want to get down nitty gritty with it, every game matters. It's 9-inning ball game. You got to win your baseball game. So the Florida fan, you're getting lucky this year. I'm not saying lucky like you're not good. I'm saying you're getting lucky like it's just the ball is falling your way where you're winning the weekends and losing the midweek. But that's not always the case. And
one more thing. Teams that make Omaha, most of the time, they win about 90% of their midweek games because that's that fourth starter or that fourth guy that you have to rely on. Possibly in an elimination game in a regional or game three in a super regional. If you can't trust that fourth guy to go out there and eat up innings, like, you're done. So most of the teams that get into Omaha are the ones that have that fourth guy that win midweek games.
Florida in a prime spot to get bounced in a regional. I can see it. I can see it. They have too many question marks where I would be like, no way. I don't think Florida gets out of that game to go regional. And it would be like X, Y, Z. I think they slip up against one of those teams. They got to play on Monday, and they lose. And bang, everyone's like, oh, my God, Florida. They're frauds. We knew it all along, yada, yada, yada. So, yeah, I mean, this last Tuesday and Wednesday was a really good midweek to remind people, like, there's a lot of good baseball teams this year.
Lot of good teams. Speaking of regionals and stuff, I'm going to share my screen real fast. We did not come out with a field of 64.
Yeah,
but D1 Baseball did. And I just want to look at it real fast as just you and I, maybe buying Jack a few more minutes to before we do our weekend series pick'em challenge. Who knows if he's able to get on in time, but if not, we'll still make our picks. But as you can see here, D1 Baseball, who I think is the best all around, like, college baseball coverage nationwide in the country. Like, these guys do it full time. This is their job. Dimitri and I do it, I guess, technically part-time, even though we spend a lot of time on it. But this was their field of 64 projection. So let's kind of give our thoughts here. As you can see, they had Arkansas, number one overall seed, hosting a regional, and then paired up with the super regional in Orlando, Florida, with the UCF Knights at the 16 seed. So looking at these, I'm going to try to be as verbal as I can, just because I know there's a lot of podcast listeners. So they have Arkansas 1 in their regional, obviously. And then Oklahoma as a 2 seed, Utah as a 3 seed, and Little Rock getting the automatic bid being the 4 seed. That looks like a regional. Like, that is a cool regional. A lot of red. I'll say that first. A lot of red. I think every team is red. But, like, Little Rock's got a guy. Dimitri, I forget his name. But who's the – doesn't Little Rock have, like, a
Levi ace? Levi Wells.
No, that was – wait, did he transfer from Texas State? No, Levi Wells was
Jackson Wells. Sorry, Jackson Wells.
Jackson Wells. Okay, yeah. That – I mean, obviously he'd be matched up against Hagan Smith, but – like, that's a guy that could win a regional game. Like, he's that good over at Little Rock.
Yeah.
Utah, a big surprise out of the Pac-12, but consistently good. Like, one of the most consistent teams out there out west. And then Oklahoma is a 2 seed who's in first place right now in the Big 12 at 7-2. But UCF has a much higher RPI.
I think it's crazy to sit here and look at UCF and be like, They're in the hosting picture halfway through the season. They would never be in this position in the American Athletic. And it's just like, it just shows you these mid-major teams that get the opportunity to get into the Power Five conferences changes their life.
Right.
Like,
no, I mean, for sure. It's way more money, way more opportunity. The scheduling's much better. But yeah, as you can see, the 16 overall seed, UCF. Their RPI right now, I believe, is like 5 or 6 in the country. And strength of schedule is like number 1 or number 2. And they have Georgia as the 2 seed there. So D1 baseball is high on Georgia right now. A team that, who knows? Like, they could fluctuate one way or the other in the SEC standings. I have no idea. And then they have Southern Miss as a 3 seed. Grand Canyon as a 4 seed. That would be an incredible regional. Like, Grand Canyon is a 4 seed. They have an ace, like a guy that can go out there and eat up 8-9 innings. So, last name of Avila, forget it, Robbie Avila. No, that's the
Alec. I mean, I know Avila.
Avila, yeah, but yeah, Southern Miss is a 3 seed, is dangerous. Georgia's super offensive. They can outslug anybody. And UCF hosting a regional. I love UCF's field. I've said it 100 times on the podcast, but like, that place is built to host regionals. It's an awesome environment, and being there in like Central Florida would be sick. Moving on though, Clemson is the 2 overall seed. They would be hosting Coastal Carolina as the 2, Arizona as the 3, and Sacred Heart is the 4. I don't think Arizona is going to make it to a regional. Like, I really don't. They're so inconsistent. I know they do have a series win against Northeastern, but maybe it's just me. I just cannot figure out this Arizona club. I pick against them and they win. I pick for them, they lose. So maybe it's a Ben Upton problem. But D1 baseball thinks that they're going to finish probably 4th or 5th in the Pac-12 here. And obviously those guys spend more time boots on the ground out in Arizona than I do. But if you're Clemson, like, you got to love your draw here. You get a Sacred Heart team that's not – I think Little Rock's way better than Sacred Heart. But Coastal Carolina is your 2. That's tough. Like, offensive team, very veteran team. But
in that ballpark.
Yeah, I mean, Clemson ball flies quite a bit too. So, but that would be a fun
reason. What I'm going to say about Arizona real quick. They win that opening weekend series. They lose the series to San Diego, so that's 1-1. They lose 2 out of 3 at the Frisco Classic. So let's just say that's 1-2. That's a week series loss. They win the series against USC when USC was dog shit at the time. They were terrible.
Yeah.
So 2-2. Lose the series to Arizona State. So 2-3. Lose the series against Oregon. 2-4. And then they beat UCLA, who's also terrible this year. So Arizona doesn't even really have a great series weekend victory. I mean, Northeastern, they're good. I think they're good. I'm still high on them, but they were at home opening weekend. Like, you take that with a grain of salt. So, I mean, we're 28 games in. They don't have a marquee series win.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, I don't think they're going to end up in a regional, but who knows? They might. They have the Clemson regional, the 2 seed, matched up in the 15 regional, the Nebraska Cornhuskers, which is one of my teams that I hope hosts a regional because Haymarket Park is freaking awesome. Nebraska did lose to Creighton in the midweek Tuesday. Was not 10,000 fans like I was told that there would be. There's probably about 3,000 fans. The weather was crappy. Wind was blowing. It was cold. Whatever. You got
bad scoop.
Yeah, the bad scoop. But Nebraska is the 1. LSU is the 2. So they think LSU will rebound, finish the year strong.
Wow.
LSU. And Creighton is the 3. St. Louis is a 4. St. Louis, I believe, has only lost like 5 or 6 games this year. They've played really well. This would be an all-time color matchup. I mean, you get the red, you get the purple, gold, you get the blue and white with Creighton, blue and white with St. Louis. Like, I would love visually to watch this regional. And I think it would sell out. It would probably be the most, I mean, because Creighton's right there. St. Louis is not too far. LSU travels really well. And Nebraska has, you know, a very strong baseball fan base. So that regional would be electric.
I played 2 years at Haymarket Park in Lincoln. I think that regional would be electric. The Nebraska fans would obviously not let any LSU fans get into that ballpark. But, you know, LSU fans would travel. They always 100%. Do. They would be up there. There's massive amounts of space for grass berm. You're right downtown Lincoln. Really fun regional.
Yep. The 3 overall seed, they have Texas A&M, which I think is pretty unanimous. I think everybody pretty much has Arkansas, Clemson, A&M, 1, 2, 3 in that order. And this one's cool. I mean, you get Texas A&M is the 1. The Raging Cajuns is the 2. And shout out to Raging Cajuns. They have the longest winning streak in college baseball right now with 12, I believe, maybe 13 now. But Raging Cajuns is the 2 seed. Texas Longhorns is the 3. And the Lamar Cardinals is the 4. I'll just go ahead and say it. Like, this one would be my favorite, hands down, to watch. I mean, you get big-time rivals, big-time fan bases, an elite 4 seed with Lamar. Everybody is right there, like, within 3 hours of each other. This would be sick in College Station.
What a regional right there. I mean, could you imagine Saturday? Imagine Texas beats Louisiana. A&M versus Texas Saturday night in College Station. Oh, my God.
Yeah, dude, it would be awesome. A lot of star power, too. But they have that 3 seed paired up with Charlottesville, Virginia. Virginia is the 14 overall seed. TCU being the 2 seed there. Rutgers 3, Bryant 4. Really, I'll be honest. Like, that regional does not move the needle for me. Like, sorry, Rutgers, sorry, Bryant. Yeah, I'm even sorry, like, UVA and TCU. Like, that would be one of – looking through the 16, I get it. Like, Virginia can be really good. TCU is an Omaha – like, 2 Omaha teams from last year. We know the NCAA is probably going to screw Rutgers out of a berth anyway, so, like, they probably won't get in. And Bryant, like, he saw a Northeastern school, but – at the end of the day, like, this one doesn't really move the needle for me.
That reminds me of the I want to say maybe with the Maryland regional last year, 2 years ago. One of the regionals I was like, dude, this is the most boring regional ever. I think that's right up there with it.
Yeah, was it Maryland, like Wake Forest,
UConn.
Yeah, it was, but it ended up being a good regional. But yeah, hopefully. I mean, I love Virginia's field, and they usually have really good, like, broadcast for regional, so I'll end up watching it. Like, I feel like Virginia always just gets, like, that noon start on Friday. And, like, they're always the first regional to start. That's just kind of my – I don't know. That's what I think, but
– I mean, they're anyways. The first midweek game, like, every week. Like, it's always – Duke and Virginia always play, like, 3 o'clock on Tuesday.
Yeah, a lot of day games. The 4 overall seed – they have North Carolina Tar Heels with South Carolina as the 2 seed. Maryland is the 3. USC Upstate is a 4. That one's going to be a fun regional.
Great regional.
Maryland's a sneaky good team. Probably, I think Maryland will end up being a 2 seed eventually. Possibly even winning the Big Ten. Just look out for Maryland. But North Carolina, South Carolina, we already know, like, they don't like each other. Battle of who is Carolina. And USC Upstate, like, they got a dude on Fridays, and they're probably going to walk or, like, run away with the Big South. But yeah, solid regional there. That's paired up with a 13 overall regional. Dallas Baptist, another one of my teams that I hope hosts a regional. Dallas Baptist is the 1. Oklahoma State is the 2. Oregon is the 3. Fresno State is the 4. That's a very winnable regional for all 4 of those teams. Like, Fresno State's really, really good. If you get them as a 4 seed in your regional, like, you should be a little worried. Those guys are all juniors and seniors and graduate students. Dallas Baptist, you know, plays really well at home, but I don't think they've been to a super regional in a long time. Well, maybe 2020.
Yeah, they did. 2 years ago. No, 2 years ago.
Against who?
They won their home regional, and they went to was that the year with Dallas Baptist was paired with Columbia?
I don't remember. You can look it up, but I think they played in the super regional against Virginia in like 2020.
Yeah, 2021. They went to super.
Oh, 2021. That's what I meant. Yep. Not 2020. There was no regionals in 2020.
Columbia. Yeah, they went to Columbia. I was right. Yeah, they went to Columbia.
Yeah. All right. 5 overall seed, Corvallis, Oregon for Oregon State hosting. They have UC Irvine as a 2. I think UC Irvine is going to eventually play themselves up into a 1 seed. I think the NCAA is going to make UC Irvine host just to have another West Coast team out there. And the resume is good. But then they have Portland as a 3, who's really, really good. A lot of people don't know about Portland, but the Pilots, they have some big wins this year already. And then North Dakota State winning the Summit League, like pretty low 4 seed, if you ask me. Hopefully, if this regional became a thing, it would be like that 10 p.m. start time. I get to watch Oregon State. Their broadcast is good. The announcers are usually good. And like the UC Irvine versus Oregon State second-round matchup would be elite. But that's paired up with the 12 overall seed. Gainesville, Florida. Florida Gators hosting.
Wait, I was going to talk about Irvine real quick. So, Irvine, you mentioned they play their way to a hosting. They've got Santa Barbara this weekend, massive RPI series, massive Big West series to win the Big West. And then they've got UC San Diego on the road. I'm kind of disappointed. I mean, they're a good team, but their RPI is bad. I don't know. And then USC, San Diego State, their RPI, dude, I don't know if they can play their way into a hosting. Northridge, 76. I mean, obviously, these RPIs are going to fluctuate and change so much. Fullerton, 173. Long Beach, 187. Cal Poly, 120. San Diego, 44. Three-game series against Riverside, 258. San Diego State, 217. They need to dominate Santa Barbara this weekend because that'll give them 3 quadrant one games right there. And then that's it. That might be the only 3 quadrant one games they get all year.
Right. Yeah, that's weird. Like, it feels like with their record and like how they've beaten teams that they would be a lot higher. Maybe the committee gives them some leeway. I just think the committee is going to, if UC Irvine finishes like 45-11, I think the committee will give them a hosting spot just because they're West Coast and there's very few qualified West Coast hosting teams. But anyways, Florida Regional is the 12 seed. You got the Gators at number 1. Kansas State is the 2. Miami is 3. Army is 4. I feel like I've seen this regional before. I don't know why. I just think these 4 teams play against each other a lot in the postseason. But
So it shows
that they think Florida is going to continue to win, you know, a lot of SEC weekends. And it shows that they think pretty highly of Kansas State being a 2 seed at a 12 regional. So
why can't they just send Miami anywhere but Gainesville? I like Miami on the road. I mean, 2021, maybe no, 2019, they played that regional Starkville with Central Michigan. They play so much better in the postseason when they get out of Miami. But Gainesville is the only place where I would just be like, it's over. We're not going to win that.
Right.
But I could totally see Kansas State winning that series or that winning that regional or Miami.
I could see Miami winning it too. I think Florida would be a heavy favorite there being at home. But we've seen Florida lose home regionals quite a bit over the last 10 years. Anyways, 6 overall seed, we have Tennessee. They're hosting the 2 seed there in that Knoxville regional, Wake Forest, the 3 seed Northeastern, and then the 4 seed Bowling Green, who's undefeated in the MAC right now. But dude, could you imagine getting Tennessee, Wake Forest, and Northeastern all in the same regional? Like, that's some firepower right there.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Did Wake Forest throw Josh Hartle or somebody else against Northeastern and throw Chase Burns Saturday night against Tennessee?
That would be That would honestly be worth the risk, to be honest.
You have to do that.
Like, former school, you know, he hasn't had very many great things to say about Tennessee. And if you're Tennessee, like, that's the last guy that you want to see on the mound.
Had Chase Burns ever done an interview where someone asked him about his time at Tennessee? I've never seen anything.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's pretty much just like both sides agreed to go away. But yeah, I mean, that would be awesome television. It would probably be the most watched. It'd be the most watched regional game if Chase Burns was pitching against Tennessee in a second round regional.
By far and away, the most watched regional game of the weekend would be Tennessee Wake Forest Saturday night. Chase Burns at Lindsey Nelson Stadium, pitching lab versus pitching lab. Dude, I'm like already excited about it. And we're 2 months away from that ever even possibly happening.
Yeah.
But I could see that regional as being Notre Dame all over again. Wake Forest gets hot at the end of the year because on paper they were supposed to be really good this year. And if everybody's healthy in the year, pitching figures it out, Wake Forest can be dangerous. Yeah. I mean,
I think Northeastern can be dangerous too in regional because there are two preseason All-Americans or their two worst hitters right now.
Yeah.
Everybody else is going off for them. So like when they get those two guys rolling, like they were a preseason top 25 team, like one of the best mid-major teams in the country. And then that's paired up with the number 11 regional, Kentucky hosting Indiana State as a 2, Kansas as a 3, Northern Kentucky as a 4. Northern Kentucky is sneaky, sneaky good. They have some big wins on their resume. We thought about ranking them in the mid-major poll this week. Like, I don't know how much I would sit and watch this regional if it happened. Like, Kansas interests me a little bit. Indiana State interests me quite a bit. Kentucky is Kentucky. You know they're going to pitch well, play good defense, run the bases well. But as far as, like, firepower, I would watch that first game, Kentucky against Northern Kentucky, and just root really hard for the Norse. Like, that would be a 4 seed that I would love to see win.
What do you think of when you think of Northern Kentucky?
The guy that transferred to Oklahoma State.
Griffin Dorshing.
Griffin Dorshing, yeah.
Probably one of the best power hitters in the lot since we've started 11.7.
He was like the Brian Boswell of college baseball.
Brian Bosworth?
Bosworth, yeah.
That guy, I'm talking power. That guy had mean machine power.
Tattoo sleeves, just blonde hair. It was awesome.
I think Kentucky as an 11th seed, I mean, depending on how they get through this next gauntlet of their schedule in the next 3-4 weeks, I would be surprised if Kentucky doesn't end up playing for a national seed. I mean, I know 11 is only 3 spots away, but if they get 1 or 2 marquee series wins, they're going to be a national seed team.
Yeah. No, I mean, they have done everything they need to right now. First place in the SEC, SEC East, of course. But, you know, if they get through the gauntlet that they have coming up, like, dude, we could talk about Kentucky possibly being the number 1 overall, like, national seed.
Well,
if they win every series.
I think they've got to beat Alabama at home and then take 2 out of 3 from Auburn on the road. 4-2, 12-3 in the SEC. And then you've got Tennessee, South Carolina, Arkansas, Florida, Vanderbilt. You lose 2 of those and get 1 against South Carolina or one of those teams. Kentucky can play their way into being in that national seed conversation.
Yeah, for sure. All right, we got 4 left. Tallahassee Regional is the 7 overall. Florida State is the 1. Alabama is the 2. Kennesaw State is the 3. Bethune-Cookman is the 4. If you're Florida State, you would love to have this. Like, you would sign up for this regional today.
Do you remember the last time this regional happened? Literally, Florida State, Alabama, Kennesaw State. Alabama's won a regional in Tallahassee. Kennesaw State's already won a regional in Tallahassee. Both of those teams.
It was a decade ago.
I mean, Kennesaw, I think it was 2014, 2015. Kennesaw went.
That's 10 years ago.
Okay, but hey, Stony Brook, the history never died.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, if you're Florida State, you have Bethune-Cookman as your 4 seed. You don't necessarily have to throw your ace. Like, obviously, Bethune's like good enough to win the conference, but like you know, you see what I'm saying? Like, you would have your ace for the second round matchup against Alabama or Kennesaw State. I think they would sign up for this 10 times out of 10.
Don't forget, that's the Kennesaw State team that went in and won a series at Kentucky.
I know, and they beat Clemson on a Friday night.
Like, that is a very difficult regional. Alabama, I think, is a really good team. I mean, they have some really Big Ten series wins. So, if I'm Florida State, I am not thrilled. You said they'd be happy. I would be not thrilled to have this regional.
Well, they would be thrilled to match up in a super regional. You got Vanderbilt as the 10 overall seed. Virginia Tech is the 2. UC Santa Barbara is the 3. And then Samford is a 4. Low-key, this is a dangerous regional if you're Vanderbilt. Like, Vanderbilt struggled last year to get out of the regional. They ultimately did not. They lost to Oregon. But this has, like, very similar vibes to last year's
regional. They got eliminated by Xavier to be 100%.
And Xavier was, like, a really good 4 seed. Like, Samford is a really good team that has a Friday night ace that could go toe-to-toe with Vanderbilt. And then Virginia Tech, their offense, I mean, Micheletti and DeMartini, like, they're in first place right now, I think, in the ACC. Tied for first, right. And then UC Santa Barbara, we already know about Matt Ager and those guys. Like, UC Santa Barbara can turn a switch on and, like, go on a big run, super talented mid-major. That would – like, this regional would be one that I would be rooting for every upset. Like, I would just want to see chaos.
I think Santa Barbara, it might be one of the more – if they get into this postseason, they might be one of the more dangerous teams because they've been playing on the road almost all year.
Yeah.
I mean, they're at home in California, kind of staying around Santa Barbara, you know, Los Angeles and all that. But they would be no stranger to playing on the road. And once you don't care about home, away, whatever, you become very dangerous.
Oh, yeah. 100%. I mean, I think that happened to there was a team, I want to say, in like the last, like, since we started the podcast last 5 years, that played something like the last 15 games on the road plus regional or conference tournaments plus regional that made a run. I want to say
Michigan.
It might have been Notre Dame 2 years ago or 3 years ago. There was like one of those teams that
played. I think it was Michigan.
Maybe it was Michigan that played all road games, like, and then conference tournament and then regionals.
I think it was their. I think their final two Big Ten series were on the road, something like that. They went to Omaha for the Big Ten tournament. Then they went all the way out to Oregon.
Yeah,
for
that sounds regional. Right.
And then they went to UCLA for the Super.
Yeah, that sounds right. Like, one of those teams is, like, going to get comfortable on the road and not care. And when you're used to living in a, you know, you have two luggage cases and living in a hotel for, like, a month and a half, like, dude, playing baseball is easy.
Yep.
So, and then the last two series, the 8-9 matchup, East Carolina is the 8. They'll be hosting NC State, who they just beat in the midweek 2 days ago. San Diego is a 3. They have San Diego as an at-large bid, which is interesting.
Which is nice. I mean, they're doing well.
Yeah, they always schedule tough non-conference, so that helps. And then Niagara is the 4 seed. I mean, this will probably come down to who's going to win the second round game. Like, I don't think any of these teams are necessarily deep. East Carolina's got two amazing starting pitching and a good relief guy.
I didn't mean to cut you off there, but San Diego, I'm surprised they're even putting them in as an at-large. I mean, they lost series against Texas. They won that series against Arizona. They lost series to Dallas Baptist. Okay, so Arizona and Michigan are their two series wins. They lost series to St. Mary's and then swept Pacific, who had 5 wins on the year. So I'm not so sure about that at large pick there. I mean, maybe they're projecting them, but no, they don't. Usually when they do these, they just go down the RPI. They don't project what they think is going to happen a month from now.
Yeah.
So that's an odd pick for me with San Diego.
Yeah. Who do they have winning that conference? I didn't even look.
I mean, Fresno State?
No, they're in different conferences. Maybe they just forgot the asterisk.
Portland.
Oh, Portland. Okay. Wow. Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know if that's a two-bid league.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I mean, do we really think East Carolina is going to get a national seed? There's no way.
I wouldn't say no way. They have a big series win against UNC. They're winning their midweeks for the most part. Like, sure, they lost 2 out of 3 to UTSA on the road, but like.
Well, I mean, I just think the American is going to be tougher than usual for them to just kind of cruise through conference play. I mean, FAU on the road, Charlotte at home, Wichita State at home, Memphis on the road, South Florida, Tulane, Rice. Like, they have got a lot of good baseball ahead of them.
Yeah.
Like,
but if they win every series, then I can see them being a national seed.
If they get through that comfortably and win a lot of those, then yeah. But I just think it can be tougher than people expect.
Yeah, that's fair. The nine seed, they have Durham, North Carolina, Duke Blue Devils hosting 2 seed Mississippi State. 2 seed Mississippi State. Interesting. Campbell is the 3. Columbia is the 4. Columbia is dangerous. We know Campbell. Campbell can be really, really good. And then Mississippi State, obviously, is kind of a roller coaster this year. Sometimes they look awesome. They did lose a midweek game on Tuesday to Central Arkansas, which doesn't help the resume. But just keep winning SEC series and you'll be fine. But like this regional would interest me. Like, I would love to see a Campbell Mississippi State game 1, and then Columbia Duke. Obviously, Duke should win with Santucci on the mound, but Columbia is one of those teams where like you would have to throw your ace. Like, you can't just throw number 2, number 3 guy and hope, because Columbia is like super offensive.
It's also
interesting that they have Columbia, not Penn. I still think Penn is a little bit better.
Yeah. I mean, you could probably make an argument for that. But this is the series. I have Duke going Omaha as my preseason pick, and I still think it's very possible. But I could totally see Mississippi State or Campbell winning that series. And I think this is a great spot for Campbell to get their first super regional appearance.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Campbell, there would be no pressure, right? Like, you're the 3 seed. You got some national brands there. And like, Campbell's just like gritty enough to not care who they're playing. Like, and Coach Kerr has done a good job where, like, if they see Mississippi State on the other dugout, they don't care. Like, they don't care if the New York Yankees are over there. Like, they're just going to play their baseball. They're going to swing for the fences. They're going to throw really fast pitches. Like, that's who Campbell is. So anyways, they
have this real quick. Look at this real quick. Their last 4 in were Rutgers, Arizona, Kansas, and Campbell. San Diego, apparently they have them as safe. Wow. Which is really confusing to me.
I guess we'll find out.
They have San Diego in over West Virginia or Texas. I mean, Texas Tech, I don't know what the deal is with them. I don't know how to gauge them right now. But West Virginia, not in over San Diego. West Virginia's RPI can only go up.
I think West Virginia is in really good position to get in the tournament. Like, I it's hard for me to see them not making it. But that's just personal opinion. I know you have to settle everything on the field, but yeah, that one's a head scratcher. St. John's, I think, has a really good path to get out of the Big East. Like, St. John's is a team that beat Florida Friday night opening day. They also have a series win against Sam Houston, who I think is really good. And I think the Big East RPI is going to be pretty consistent, like top 6 the rest of the season.
St. John's got 222 Villanova this weekend, 68 UConn, 163 Butler, 37 Xavier, 39 Creighton, 132 Seton Hall, 54 Georgetown. They have everything in front of them to get into at large bid. I mean,
I think St. John's is like almost safe right now. Like, the RPI is.
You just got to win. You just got to win. The opportunity is in front of them to do it.
But anyways, like, this is just, I mean, this is April 4th. Still tons of baseball to be played, but I was happy to look at this field of 64. I think it's always fun to look ahead and just see what your team needs to get in the position to either host a regional, get in the tournament, or what you have to do not to lose out on making the tournament. So we'll come out with our own projections. Like, obviously everybody's opinion is a little bit different. Nothing is set in stone. Like, nothing is. Like, even Clemson or Arkansas could find a way not to host a regional. There's still a lot of baseball to be played.
They only had 3 Sun Belt teams in there. Louisiana, Southern Miss, and Coastal, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Only 3 Sun Belt teams. Interesting.
Right. But anyways, we're an hour into the pod. We're going to go ahead and do our weekend series pick 'em preview. Six series here. I guess Jack will text us his picks later on. Jack is doing much better than me and much better than Dimitri as well. We'll look at the leaderboard real quick. High Heat, 34, 30 and 14 in first place on our leaderboard. C. Latham, 44, is 29 and 15, tied with Nick Lavergetta. Smiles, 117. Fade Ben, that's mean. Fade Ben, 22, is also 29 and 15. And so is Cola B-Ball. Cola B-Ball was on our leaderboard all of last year. Like, he, whoever that person is, I don't know who it is, but they're a baller. And then four tied at 28 and 16. We got E. Shockley, 24. Andrew Miller, shout out Campbell. The Real Truth, 28 and 16. And then Cawthorn, I believe is how it's pronounced, 28 and 16 as well, just two games back. A lot of weekend series left. Like, you can make up ground quickly, especially if you start fading the public like I have. So, anyways, the six weekend series, we have Xavier, UConn, East Carolina, FAU, Georgia at Mississippi State, Oklahoma at Oklahoma State, Kansas State at UCF, and UC Santa Barbara at UC Irvine. Really, really competitive. Like, we don't always pick the most marquee matchups, but we do try to pick very competitive 50-50 coin flip matchups.
I think these are difficult.
Yeah, these are really difficult. And we'll start right here. Xavier, UConn. Obviously, you look at the record. Xavier 14 and 14 this year, UConn 10 and 15. But two teams that have kind of cracked the RPI code. They play very, very difficult non-conference schedules on the road the first month, month and a half of the season. And then they just play the conference games. And midweeks are usually really competitive as well. But I've been high on this Xavier team all year. They go into LSU. They win. They're competitive the first two games and then win on Sunday. And on top of that, like, I just think that they have a lot of hidden talent. I'm going to go with Xavier here on the road at UConn. This UConn team is good. I don't think they're as good as that super regional team a couple years ago. And I don't really think home field advantage matters this much. Xavier is used to going on the road. UConn's not used to hosting home games. I think they only have like 10 or 11 this year. So I'm going to take the Musketeers with my pick.
I really want to take Xavier, and I think I'm going to. They have a lot of competitive series. I mean, so did UConn. I mean, both of these teams play really tough schedule. Xavier, I think, got one. They lost a series to Indiana State. They have a couple other big-time wins. UConn has played all over the country against the best teams in the country. So, and usually this time of the year, the Big East runs through stores, Connecticut. I want to take Xavier, but I'm going to take UConn here. I think this is a chance for them to, you know, get a series win. They've been busting their ass all year against the best teams in the country, like I said. So give me UConn here.
Yep. Next series, East Carolina at FAU. East Carolina 21 and 6 and 4 and 2 in the American. FAU 17 and 9, 4 and 2 in the American. People forget opening weekend, FAU should have won 2 out of 3 at Vanderbilt. And they ended up winning one game. They blew a lead in the first game. But this FAU team, like, really, really talented. Didn't they just beat Miami in the midweek?
They're 2-0 against Miami in the midweek this year.
Yeah, like, this is a team that has rebuilt, have a resurgent. Like, we're used to them being really good. 2019, they were in that Georgia regional, and they had a guy, I forget his name, but he, like, led the country in doubles. They were super offensive, and then they kind of faded away the last couple years, but they're back. I say all that to say I'm taking East Carolina on the road. They've already slipped up once on the road. It's not going to happen a second time. This, like, the win of this series might, like, be in really good position to win the American, if you think about it. If East Carolina is 5-4 and FAU is 6-3, like, and have the tiebreaker, like, FAU could potentially win the American regular season. They would have just a much better upper hand. But I'm going to take East Carolina. Look, I think that the pitching staff plays, the weekend pitching staff especially. I just really – and the way that they swung the bats this midweek against NC State, I think will carry over. FAU is a tough place to play. Not a very good – it's just not like a rowdy environment at all. I think East Carolina – if they can just stay focused, should win the series.
I'm just going to fade that. I want to take East Carolina too, but I'm just going to fade it. I like the narrative to change. The American Athletic, it's time for somebody else to win it. It's time for somebody else to win this damn conference. So give me the Owls of FAU. I think they can get through it. I think they can get through this weekend, get it to Sunday. I think they have a good shot. I mean, I think East Carolina is the better team, but I want to just take FAU for fun because I do think they have a chance.
God, I sure hope Jack takes East Carolina, because if East Carolina wins the series and there's two FAU graphics up on the graphic you make, like, East Carolina fans are going to come and burn us down to the ground. It happens every week when we all agree on one team. I don't know. Anyways, so you're taking FAU.
Yep.
All right. Next is Georgia at Mississippi State. Georgia 23-6, 4-5 in the SEC. Mississippi State 19-11, 4-5 in the SEC. I think Charlie Condon, I mean, actually more than Charlie Condon. Like, I think the whole UGA hitters are going to be looking at the tiny fences, small field, and one of two things is going to happen. Either one, they're going to hit a bajillion home runs and launch balls out of the ballpark, hitting the apartments behind it, or they're going to look and see how small the field is and swing for the fences and get themselves out. I like Mississippi State this weekend. They already got embarrassed in the midweek. Central Arkansas came into town, beat them in the midweek. Georgia, they've been playing up and down baseball all year, similar to Mississippi State, but it's the narrative of SEC home teams typically win the series. So I'm taking the Bulldogs. I might highly regret this come Saturday, but if they can just not give up meatballs to the middle of the Georgia order, like, they should score enough runs. Also, one more request. The NCAA should put a million dollar prize on tonight, Thursday night. Charlie Condon versus Dakota Jordan home run derby. Who says no? Televise it on ESPN Plus. $1 million to the winner. How fun would that be?
I mean, that sounds cool, I guess. But give me Miss. I think that would be fun, but I just think that I want some more hitters there. But anyway, 100% give me Mississippi State at home. The dude is going to be rowdy. Thursday night, all eyeballs will be on the series on SEC Network. You got a top five pick in Charlie Condon and a team, Georgia team, that has rebounded nicely since their opening weekend of SEC play. So, but I think Mississippi State, I think it's a good team. I think what we saw from Mississippi State a month ago compared to now is much better. This is a good baseball team. And I think it's hard to win at the dude. I mean, LSU, you saw that. It's hard to win there. It's always been hard. I'm very confident to take the Bulldogs.
This series definitely starts on Friday, right?
Yeah, you're right. Sorry, Friday, not Thursday.
You scared me there for a second because I was like, man, we would have recorded a day earlier if it was Thursday night. But yeah, it's definitely Friday night.
Friday, yeah.
I'm just saying, like, Thursday night, tonight, they should have done a home run derby, Charlie Condon, Dakota.
Oh, that's where I got that from. I was like, where did I get
that? Yeah, that's what I meant. I might not have explained it. But anyways, three series left. We got Oklahoma 16-12 overall, 7-2 in the Big 12. At Oklahoma State, at Obrate Stadium, 19-10 on the year, 5-4 in the Big 12. Look, I'm going to go with Oklahoma here. I still am a believer that Oklahoma State is just, like, not a good – they're a good team. They're not a great team. I've seen them play multiple games where they've just looked terrible. I know they have star power. I just think Oklahoma is built to win Big 12 series. They got embarrassed last weekend in a non-conference, getting swept by Lamar. But, hey, Lamar's a good team. I think Lamar might be better than Oklahoma State. Give me Oklahoma on the road. I hope the weather is good because I love watching the Oklahoma State broadcast. And, man, Oklahoma 7-2 in the Big 12. Like, that holds some weight. I know they got swept last week and whatever. Like, they're going to bounce back.
Man, I think Oklahoma State is playing much better now than they were 3 weeks ago. Series win over TCU, series win at West Virginia, at home against Oklahoma. Man, I think this is the hardest one to pick. One of the hardest ones to pick.
I think it's the second hardest for me. Second hardest to pick.
Every time I pick Oklahoma State, I feel like they let us down over the last couple of years. Every time we do it, they let us down. You know what? I think this is the start of a little run for Oklahoma where they play bad. Give me Oklahoma State at home. Give it to me.
That's not a bad pick. Like Oklahoma doing the hot, cold, hot theory already.
Give me the Pokes.
All right. Second to last series here, Kansas State at UCF. I think this one's probably the easiest one to pick for me. Kansas State has to go on the road and fly from Manhattan, Kansas, down to Orlando, Florida. UCF is starting to finally get a little bit of recognition. I wouldn't call it hype yet because I think there's still some people that are doubting them and their high RPI. But a team that's playing with confidence, I saw last weekend against Texas Tech. Like, this team thrives in home games. They love playing in front of their crowd. And, like, Kansas State, like, I know they lost last weekend at home to Texas. Like, they should be refocused again. But flying down to Orlando, a lot of distractions, big campus, nice stadium. I think UCF is going to be ready to play. I think they're going to jump on Kansas State early. And, like, who knows? Like, this UCF team might be the real freaking deal, dude. Like, they might. I know they're 19-7 overall, 6-6 in the Big 12, but that if they just win one game on the road that opening Big 12 weekend against Oklahoma, there were some winnable games there. Then they're 7. If they win just one, like, they're 7-5. And I don't know. I'm buying high on this UCF team. I think there's a lot there. And I think they're one of the few teams similar to like Miami. They play with a lot of passion, a lot of energy, and, you know, they're coached really well. Like, they don't make dumb mistakes. So Kansas State could go in there and possibly out-talent them. I mean, they got some All-Americans there on Kansas State's roster, but I just think a team that's playing well and playing together is the team that I want to pick. So give me the Knights.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it all pretty well. I think this UCF team is good. I think they're starting to show people, like, hey, we're legit. We can come out of the American and compete in the Big 12, and that's how baseball usually is. I think East Carolina could do the same thing. So don't just sleep on them just because, you know, they weren't in the Power 5 a year ago. But I think this Kansas State team is too good. I think they're going to really show. I think as we get to the later part of the year, like starting now, the good teams are going to rise to the top. And I think Kansas State is one of the good teams. So I think they win this series. They take care of business in Orlando. Give me the Wildcat.
Yeah. Another reason I had for this UCF series, like winning on Sunday, like it's going to come down to, I think for me personally, like who can win on Sundays? UCF has been a lot better. I don't have stats to back it up. Someone can probably look it up and be like, well, actually, technically they haven't. But like from the eyeball test, I've seen both of these teams play a lot of Sundays and because they usually play like the noon game. Like one of the first, Kansas State gave up 21 runs to Texas last Sunday, or I guess technically Saturday because it was Easter weekend. But game three, like who can win a game three? UCF, like I just think they have much more pitching depth. And I always like a little bit more energized team on game three. So that was another reason I wrote down. But finally, the last series here, UC Santa Barbara at UC Irvine. This series means a lot. Mostly because they don't have a conference tournament at the end of the year. The winner of the regular season gets the automatic bid. I think both of these teams have very safe paths to make it to a regional, just at large bid or whatever. But as we saw last year, UC Irvine did get left out because there was no conference tournament to boost the RPI last minute or potentially win the tournament. So I've had this series circled. I know you have too, Dimitri, for a long time. UC Santa Barbara on the road at UC Irvine, two of the most, like I would say these are two of the top five most talented teams on the West Coast. I'm going to take UC Irvine here just because it's at home. I know we've talked about everything for UC Santa Barbara's technically been on the road. But UC Irvine, I think, has a very big home field advantage. That's why I think if they can host a regional, like you've got to love your chances of getting to Omaha or at least a super regional if you're an Anteater fan. Top to bottom, these teams match up pretty well. But that's why it's kind of a coin flip. I'm going to take the home team here. But if you're UC Santa Barbara, you win this series, you set yourself up to be in like prime position to win the regular season. That's kind of my thoughts.
Give me Irvine. I don't have much to say. I think this team is better. I think Santa Barbara showed they're really good. I think they have a series win at Oregon. They lost that opening weekend to Campbell. They blew one the Saturday game, maybe. I think they blew it big time. But I think this Irvine team, I'm going to stick with them. My gut, I think this team is so good. Preseason, we had Santa Barbara 1 and Irvine right behind them, like 3, 4, or 5, somewhere in that range. But I think Santa Barbara has shown some of their holes, some of their weaknesses, and I think this Irvine team is strong across the board. Give me the Aggies. By the way, if there is a series you want to watch and learn about West Coast baseball and get a feel just one time all year, this is the one to watch. This is the one to watch, and it will tell you everything you need to know about the Big West and how good these teams are.
Right. No, and great broadcast at Irvine too. Super, super professional. Them in Long Beach State, I love watching their broadcasts. It's great stuff. One last thing here before we go. I know Dimitri has to catch a flight, but we have 3 really good series starting Thursday as we're recording this. Ole Miss at Arkansas, Vanderbilt at LSU, North Carolina at Virginia. Let's quickly just give our thoughts on all 3. Ole Miss, like, dude, you're going to be facing Hagan Smith on a Thursday night, like at home. Like, that's a tough matchup. Maybe try to play for a Friday-Saturday win if you're Ole Miss. I don't think that they're going to match up against Arkansas and Hagan Smith. But that one's going to be a fun one to watch. I'm more excited to watch the other 2 series, though. Vanderbilt at LSU. Like, can LSU win a series at home in desperate times? Because if LSU starts 3-9 in SEC play, that is so much different than starting 4-8, and so much different than 5-7. I think this is almost like a must-win series. Like, it's almost a must-win series. Shoot, dude, they could be 2-10 if they get swept at home. I'm not saying they're going to, but my God, like, Vanderbilt is not going to be intimidated by the box. Like, that is – like, they're going to be ready to play. So – I know Vanderbilt got swept at South Carolina 2 weeks ago. So, like, they haven't really proven it on the road yet. But must
win series. 3 on the road. LSU. They have 3 games on the road.
Yeah. Must win series for LSU. Like, you have to do whatever it takes to win 2 out of 3. Because 3-9 is so much different than 4-8.
I think this fits the narrative perfectly of what pattern we've seen this year. Great weekend, bad, followed up by a bad weekend. Bad weekend followed up by a good week. I think this is the perfect spot for LSU to take a series and kind of say, hey, we're just playing bad right now. We're still a really good team. Like, pump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah, also, like, if LSU goes out and sweeps Vanderbilt, like, then Vanderbilt's got a problem. Hey, we're 0-6 in SEC play on the road. That would be something the committee does not want to see. And anyways, like, I'm projecting a big Tommy White series. Like, you got to step up. You got to.
How many times are you going to say that?
Like, he has, like, this year. Like, he's played really well. And like, has improved his draft stock. But if you
keep saying big Tommy White weekend, wouldn't that at some point become a normal weekend for Tommy White?
No, I'm talking like 3+ homers, like 10+ RBIs. Like, he's got to just do more than what he's doing. And it's not fair to him because other guys aren't stepping up. But I think if he goes like nuclear mode, I think the rest of the team will follow. And then obviously North Carolina, 10-2 in the ACC on the road at Virginia, 7-5. We know both of these teams. Like, they got flamethrowers on the mound and they got big bats. Like, I'm expecting some high scoring games. I like Virginia to win this series just because I think North Carolina is playing better than what they actually are, if that makes sense. Like, I think they're not as good as a 10-2 ACC team. And 2 of those losses were on the road to Miami. But anyways, like, I think that North Carolina trips up. I think Virginia wins 2 out of 3.
Interesting. I could see that. But I think North Carolina is playing really well right now. They're swinging at the best they could possibly swing it. And I just think that's just going to continue this weekend. I would take North Carolina there.
Cool. Well, anyways, we appreciate everybody that follows us and listens to the pod and watches it on YouTube. You guys check out our store. Like we talked about it earlier, we got some really cool merch up there. Going to release some more here soon. But anyways, like we appreciate everybody. Thank you so much. Tell your friends, tell your parents about us. College baseball is about to go full swing here in April, May, June. And anyways, y'all enjoy the weekend and we'll be back Sunday night. See everybody.